So cheers, man. You know what I'm saying?
Cheers to you.
It's been a long day of interviews, and you get the dude at the end of the day having himself a Miller Lite.
You know I don't blame you, man. That's a great, you know, if you're looking for a domestic, that's always the one I run to, man, is a Miller Lite.
I run to the ones that are sitting around from tour, and I had to crack three, cracked a Yingling, a Rolling Rock, and then got to this Miller Lite. And this is the only one that had any carbonation. Oh, it's crazy. Wow. Like, I didn't know that beer just goes bad. But
yeah,
man, we don't ever have it here long enough to know that. But we had a lot after the last tour. He got left all here at the studio when they dropped everything off from tour. And so I went to go have a cold one, and it took a couple to get to this choice Miller Lite.
Well, dude, lots to get into. Got to get into the odyssey of making the new album, the tour. Look back in that last tour, I think you were talking about, and get your opinion on a couple of things. But, dude, let's get into the odyssey of making this album. I mean, so many things, the pandemic, Patreon, new record label. Talk to me about making this bad boy.
Man, here's the cliff notes. We made the record in 2017, Godless Prophets, and it was kind of just like, you know, mic drop, you know, like, honestly, I remember saying to like my wife and my friends, like, man, I don't even know if I need to make another Darkest Hour album. Like, I loved it so much. And I thought it was just like the ultimate sort of end of the circle from where we went on the self-titled and blah, blah, blah. And then we went on tour because we loved the tour. We did that forever, right? For about 2.5 years. And then, we started thinking, well, you know, we've got all these songs, like maybe we'll do singles, maybe we'll do this or that. And so then I started playing around with the Patreon idea, and then boom, the pandemic hit. And then everything sort of shifted focus, and we did so much on the Patreon and so much with like live streaming and random shit and survived that all wildness that when we came out the end of it, we were like, man, we should just fuck it. Just do it ourselves, man. Who gives a shit? Like, you know, this little Patreon thing is doing better than a lot of the record deals we did. And fuck it. You know, we did the crowdfund thing for Godless Prophets. So this felt like it worked. So then touring sort of started up again. And we were like, well, we ain't trying to make no sit around and make a record now that we can go on tour. So we did the celebration of the Deliver Us record, which got us out there again, and I think was perfect because it sort of got everyone mobilized to be like, oh yeah, like Darkest Hour is an album band. We need to make this like the perfect record. What are we doing? Like, we love this. Look at how excited people are. You know, look at how much better we can play this shit now after practicing held up in the pandemic and shit. And then we sort of got motivated. The Patreon was sort of propelling us forward. That was what was funding us. We came off that tour, we went at it hard. And then out of nowhere, sort of like the last piece of the puzzle was, we connected with this record label, MNRK, which has a whole cast of characters from other labels we've worked with, people we've known in the past. And since I've been like very much involved with the band's management since the beginning of the band, and even though we've had managers and booking agents and blah, 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 I'm always sort of there as the band advocate. I knew all these people's names. I mean, I knew all their emails and I knew what it was all about. So when they approached us at first, I was like, hey, we're not having it. We're doing this Patreon thing. We're going to do our own record ourselves. Like, we're over it. We're never giving the rights away to anything. Blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And then we got into the details. I realized like they were willing to sort of like, they were just excited what we were doing and how we have kind of evolved and what was happening. And they were like coming at us with a pitch that's like, hey, you know, your bubble is this big, but look at what we can do if you just work with us. And so I think after having a lot of back and forth and sort of tailoring the plan and the deal, what works for us, we were able to get something that allowed us to keep all the freedom that we've created and the just wild shit that we can do on the Patreon. Like, hey, here's a song we recorded we didn't put out. Like, we can do that. That's can't just do that on the internet. People right. steal it, put it on YouTube, blah, blah, blah. So it's just, we've kept that freedom and we've been able to do a traditional album launch for this album, which we love so much. And it's kind of like the best of both worlds currently. Now, I know that's usually never works out in the music industry, but we're good with taking punches. So we're ready for the next one. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And this just feels like a good fit. And it allowed us to get to here, which is now we have Perpetual Terminal and two singles in, and I can't wait for everybody to hear the whole album.
Yeah, man.
Hopefully that gets you the most of the story.
That is. And I was going to touch on that because for a minute you guys were on E1, and that's what E1 turned into Monarch, right?
Yeah, Monarch consumed E1 and a few other smaller labels. Like Monarch is owned by a bigger company that sort of has its tentacles in every music brand. Mm. So I think that, maybe not music brand, maybe every music genre, but they are like really into branding as well. So it's kind of like they mix it all up. Hmm. And I think what's good about them is they're good when directed, like they're really good at what they do, and bands sort of just, they conform more to the band than other labels I've been on that are more of like a culture within the label. And then you sort of conform to the culture of it. Although they are getting a lot more bands, and that's sort of where the tour spawned from, and so they're also building a culture around the label too. Anyway, it just seemed like a good fit for what we had already sort of put together organically.
Well, I love it, man. I'm loving the album, loving the first couple of tunes out there. And I lost my mind when I heard Societal Bile, man. I feel like the whammy bar has been gone for way too long. I'm glad you're bringing it back, bro.
Oh, man. I think we wanted to put that song out second. John's vision was to like introduce people to the album in the order that the album is. And my vision was more to just like, I don't know, make sure people know that we're not also not taking this that seriously. Like, we still love this, and love like what it is at its most basic core. So the first single was very grandiose, and we did a lot to make it feel like there was a lot of production to it. It was recorded in two different continents,
Wow.
But I think I really felt for that song. We just wanted to take it back to what we do really good, which is just be in your face with a really awesome song. Now, basically that song like wrote itself in every way. And I think it just is a fun song. And the best part about it, and I know this sounds weird, is that like, man, we all know the song rips. This song was a no-brainer. It couldn't be the first song, but we knew it was good as a band. And the best part is we got all these other songs that everybody doesn't know about that rip too in all new ways.
Yep.
And the cool thing about Societal Bile is it's really pizza for Darkest Hour fans. It's really like, good old margarita pizza. Everyone likes it, even if it's vegan cheese, And I think that there's a lot of that on this record, but there's a lot for a band that's in its 10th record that's still stepping out. And I think that says a lot to the musicality of a lot of the, band members. Like, we're playing to everybody's strengths. So you can't just stay in the box that's been there, And so it's kind of like, I'm really excited for people to hear the other songs, judging from the excitement of these two, And the next single that will drop on the release of the album is going to be awesome too. And it's going to just be in a whole other direction. So it's just cool.
I love it, man.
There's a lot for this. There's a lot happening on the record.
Yeah, no, that's what I was going to get into. I was fortunate enough to get to an advance of the record and hear some of it. And another tune that stood out to me was like Mausoleum.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's going to be the one that motherfuckers are going to want to type about. But this song is interesting because it sort of showcases just John on the acoustic guitar and singing for a little bit.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about it is it's actually him like playing acoustic guitar. Like,
oh, wow.
I can't believe that in a room full of fucking insane guitar players, let him play guitar. Are you kidding me? But it was wild. Like, he introduced the song to us in a part of the songwriting process or the album writing process where everything existed that existed enough to be a Darkest Hour record. But we were kind of like, well, but what else could you even think up kind of vibe, And John, he doesn't get to present song ideas very often this way because there's so many that are presented towards him on guitar.
Sure.
That's how they normally are born. But this one was unique because he was kind of like, hey, I have this idea. And instead of like demos and, passing the shit back around, like Societal Bile, for example, was recorded originally as like a little song demo here in my this room that I'm in, you know, and then email to everybody. And the fucked up thing is everybody's like, oh, that's sick.
Perfect.
I mean, I don't even know how much we changed. Of course we did. It morphed. But sure. But it was one of those things where just home run, you know. But Mausoleum, every song nobody knows we're talking about, but later we'll see this and figure it out, was presented by John. Like, he said, hey, I have this idea for a song. And then he just literally like sat down in front of us and played it.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And then what happened was, at first, we were sort of like, ah, could that be a Darkest Hour song? Like, wait, like, what? When, you know, how does this fit in? Sure. And I think it also took the like 1-2 punch of like me and the other guys coming to the table and being like, okay, so, you know, instead of like taking this song and then rewriting it, and then like, what if it's like the beginning is this, and it goes and it preserves more of a crescendo kind of thing. And it just like, once we got fun with the songwriting and the song like structures, and we just sort of took it out of like, make it a pop song, then it all just flew. And I mean, that happened with a lot of songs on the record. Like, another song that's melodic and heavy is this one called One with the Void. Mm-hmm. That's like, in a whole other way, melodic, you know, and also mid-tempo, which is the thing we don't step out and do that often.
No.
And, you know, there's plenty of fast. And I just like, if we're just, I'm talking about the record like this, I just want to say, man, the last song on the record, which is basically the longest song, that's my personal favorite.
Ah.
You know, and it's not going to get a lot of attention. It won't get a music video. It probably won't get played live right away.
Right.
But if all y'all motherfuckers on the internet check this album out and you figure out it's the best song like me, and it gets streamed up at the top, then maybe the old committee of dudes and everybody will be like, ah, I guess we do got to commit to 6 minutes of playing that live. But I don't know. There's so many things that I do love about the record, and it's cool to be able to just like look at it like a painting on the wall that is done.
Yeah.
You know, because then, you know, you can reflect on parts you like and don't like, but you can just also like, it is freeing to just be able to walk away from it now because we have worked on it for so long. And I, you know, that I think that's, all of that kind of makes this album special, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was going to get into with like Mausoleum and stuff. It's a real roller coaster and an album. Like, I love that you guys are still putting out albums. I'm old enough to still love albums, and you do get that whole ebb and flow, and you need those Mausoleum and the acoustic stuff to kind of break up the heaviness. So it does kind of give you that roller coaster ride.
I mean, don't get me wrong. There was a version of the album that just punched you in the face. But to me, that's also basically Godless Prophets. Yeah. You know, and I think that we really wanted to make a statement here that there are waves, there are tides on this record, yeah. You know, and it's not as much of a single color, which I see like more of Godless Prophets is just red, you know, and this is kind of just all over the place. But I don't even want to get too trippy on y'all, you know.
Well, one other thing I got to touch on, just especially with you being the guitarist, man, I'm always curious about like the little instrumental passages, like Amor Fati or Fati.
Oh yeah, that's how you say it. Amor Fati. It's actually Latin, you know. But I mean, it just basically means love your fate, you know. And it's kind of like we love these little weird, stupid, stoic, you know, sayings that everybody, you know, compares the misery of the you know, subtle first world problem misery of being in a band, I must add, you know what I mean?
Right.
And this one stuck out to me about it because it sort of falls in line with like a lot of our fucking Darkest Hour tattoos, our funny fucking tattoos, really kind of all play on one theme, which is that like, yeah, shit sucks, so accept it till it doesn't suck anymore. And this is, you know, we like this, you know, kind of thing. And you know, kind of just bear it, you know, with your friends, and then it's worth bearing kind of vibe. And that theme just stuck, you know. But the song I feel like is still one of my greatest achievements as a songwriter, even though every dude in the band would laugh if I said that in front of them. But it's like, here's why, right? Because I didn't write that sick ass solo, okay? Nico did.
I
didn't come up with the beats, but somebody had to be, you know, in the sick ass bass line like Aaron Deal. But somebody had to go, hey guys, what if like we delete this entire song and then we make this part a song, only it's instrumental passage, only it's an instrumental, and it's only this long, and that's it. You know what I mean? Like, where that came from, it was like a bridge in the song, and it was like a great standout part, but the song just meandered, you know, that it was a part of. And I'll never forget, like, sort of, I make these little sketches of the album and just listen to them, and I was by myself, and I was like, dude, you know what? Fuck it. What if that's just like, rip that solo, bam, you know? And then I was like, oh, that's like not a bad idea. No one's going to buy that. And then I had to sort of go down the committee and sort of present it to everybody. And then, you know, like, we have a really good collaborative thing going on where, like, everybody in this band pushes back when they don't like something, but they also know, like, I'm an India guy. So for like whatever one song idea you don't like, here's 10 more, you know, right, what I mean? Let's fucking go. And so I think they've figured out how to like navigate that, my style a little bit, to be like, okay, he's weeded this out, or this might be good. And I think it was a healthy, like, what? No way. And then, okay, maybe that got us to that cool song. And I mean, that song has been played live a ton. It kills live. People don't see it coming. They don't even know what's happening. And that was even before we played that song a bunch before the albums come out.
Wow.
We had a little interlude, and it just was awesome to see people's iPhones in the air and just go like, what? And I mean, you know, in the age of the internet, it's cool to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. You never get to be able to surprise people. And then, you know, the amazing thing is there's not really any footage of it on YouTube. Nobody picked it up. I mean, dude, we played it all on the last tour of Exodus, and it still really didn't get, because it doesn't get noticed, because it just happens in the set and you're not ready, and then it's over.
Right.
You know, and it's, so I don't know. It's a magic moment on the record, starts off the B side, and it's a cool thing we're going to do live a lot. And, you know, for all those guitar players out there, get your noodle on. You know what I mean?
Well, I love that, man. I figured it was either part of a song or a chance to showcase Nico. And it sounds like it was, well, that song that Hack got,
I
like,
mean,
hacked, like you
we're
said.
All. We always want to showcase the guitar. It wasn't like, yo, we got to show this guy off now. You know what I mean? We always like want to show that off. This is a guitar heavy band. But it did get born from a thing, but it did feel like eventually it could be its own thought, yeah. You know, and it felt like we could do that in the same way that we could make a song that was a little poppy. We can make a song that's death metal. We can make, we have another song on another record that's super heavy and grindy and only 1 minute long too. So it lives in that space. That's why this record's so cool. It has all those type of shit, all that shit all over it. Just all, everybody just needs to get it, because, you know, it'll be the price of like one Starbucks coffee, but you'll be able to help these five lunatic heavy metal dudes just keep doing it a little longer.
I love it, man. Digging the album and looking forward to the tour. We got you in Southern California, March 14th, downtown LA at 1720. And hell of a bill you put together.
Oh, yeah.
I Am Mouth for War and Somnuri. I love Justin Sherrill.
Hell yeah. Well, basically, when we were putting back this tour together, we were like, you know, we need to carry on the tradition that we used to do of like bringing out all these young bands. Cause I started looking at past tour ads originally to get ideas of like older bands that were active that we could hit up. Like, mm-hmm. Yo, let's get Himsa back together. Yo, let's get A Life Once Lost back together, you know?
Right.
But then after a while, I started thinking like all these bands, like Amir, Whitechapel, Himsa, A Life Once Lost, you know what I mean? Like Cephalic Carnage. Dude, you just go down the line of all these bands that have opened for Darkest Hour and gone on and had awesome careers and stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, man, we need to go find some younger bands, but what scene do we fit in? You know what I mean?
Right.
And then, so I think that's where the label became the through line there, because they've got some really cool, active, hard, hungry new bands, and they've been super awesome. I mean, literally, like, they helped pave the road to everything we've got now. And so we were like, hey, you guys, we've partnered on the album front, let's partner on the tour front. Like, fuck it, let's just bring all MNRK bands, and we'll make it sort of a celebration of this new thing we got going on and these new hungry bands you got touring. And I mean, I would have loved to have it be just like us and locals every night, because we were a local band and we want to showcase locals. But I think that this story just fit
here. Yeah.
And you know, maybe later on, I was thinking more of like for our 30th anniversary of the band or for an anniversary of Mark of the Judas, maybe we could do the locals thing where it's just us and locals. And, you know, it's kind of gives us a chance to give those bands the opportunity that we had to play with touring bands. But this tour is more about branding with this label that helped us do this and these other bands that are kind of similarly trying to do the same thing we're doing nationwide, you know. And for the people that go to the show, this is some serious fucking badass shit for the buck. You know what I mean? Because these are all bands that are headlining. Like I Am is a headliner, you know, Mouth for War and Filth is Eternal. Dude, those bands can also go headline and be, it just kill it. You know, and Somnari, who's new, you know, they're super awesome. So they're that band that will play that show that you had no idea and they're killer. And it's cool to have a band like them on the bill that's got just kind of a little bit different sound to open it up. So, you know, yeah, people need to get down to the show, especially LA, because that show's going to pop off. Like 1720 always goes hard. We always have great shows there. And, you know, it's Metal City and we're not down on the strip. This ain't like, you know, your daddy's heavy metal. This is more of just like the heavy metal of now. You know what I'm saying?
Hell yeah.
In LA proper. On the dirty side.
Very dirty side.
Dirty enough. Fuck it.
You know, talking about that one thing, you're talking about this tour package, which I love, going out with Monarch bands, kind of like Roadrunner used to do. The Roadrunner used to put together a lot of packages where it was all Roadrunner bands. But one suggestion, I do love the idea of doing all local bands, but I pray that one day we get one more Darkest Hour and Bleeding Through tour, because...
Oh, I mean, dude, whatever. Don't count your foot, dude. Don't hold, I mean, you can hold your breath because that shit could happen anytime. You know, we still keep in touch with those guys. I still text Brandon, you know, and of course, keep up with everybody on social media.
Sure.
We saw them like most recently at, man, I'm pretty sure I saw them at the Blue Ridge Fest. We played that.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, and then, but also, you know, I'll see them in LA or I'll see them out there every once in a while. Like they'll be on tour and I'll go out. So it's like, of course, you know, and Unearth is another band we pair up with all the time.
Yeah.
Shadows Fall is a band we pair up with all the time. So it's like, we have like our brother bands like that, bands that came up in that same year, no doubt. But this tour is more about like, not back then. It's about now. Right now, kind of thought.
Yeah. Well, speaking of tours too, I did want to touch upon the tour that you just completed. I was so bummed I missed it because it was Thanksgiving weekend here in Southern California. But talking about that, Fit for an Autopsy and Exodus tour, which is another great package. I feel like you're kind of both of those bands in a way. You're a little death, a little thrashy, a little bit of everything.
But well, the best thing about that tour was that you have the proprietors, the kings, the creators of Skull, Death, Slam Metal, Undeath. Then you have like basically the creators of thrash metal, Exodus. And then you have this new school, like heavy metal, death metal from the future, you know, Fit for an Autopsy, just that wild new school shit. And Darkest Hour, the awesome thing is that we ride the edge of being able to cruise with all those bands.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we can get just as heavy as some of the death metal bands. We've been on tour with Behemoth and Cataclysm, you know what I mean? And Belphegor, fucking crazy death metal shit. And then we've also been around the older Statesman thrash bands and, you know, kind of like how the vibe of their fans work and how the vibe of their show flows and how it feels like a concert.
Yeah.
You know, and then we also have music that fits in with everything that's happening right now in current heavy metal. In the way that Fit for an Autopsy. So we're like a very unique band in the sense that while all those bands are amazing and talented, you know, we've existed in the lane that we have the entire time without really changing that much and fit in all the categories.
Yeah.
You know? And so hopefully that will translate into this album, a universal album for people that love all the flavors of heavy metal and death metal, whatever is under the metal umbrella, you know? Because we just love like loud guitars, fucking double bass, and, you know, someone screaming their fucking, you know, face off. And, you know, and everything in between, basically.
That's what I love about you guys. You can't stick you in a box other than metal, but you know, there's no box that you fit into.
Yeah, I mean, I think certain albums fit in boxes, you know what I mean?
Sure.
But we would like to just take the whole cart, you know.
Mike, I appreciate all the time. Last thing I got for you, man. We're an old school radio station. We do a feature called Mandatory Metallica every night at 10 p.m., which you're going to be a part of. And I've been having this little Metallica debate, and I wanted to get your opinion on it.
Okay, here we go.
Debating the greatest Metallica album ever, and it comes down to Ride the Lightning versus Master of Puppets. Out of those two, which one would be your numero uno?
Oh, shit. Man, Lightning is fucking sick. Like, I love the tuning and the sound of it, and I love, like, how it's kind of high, you know, and it has, you know, some badass tracks. Like, I love Trapped Under Ice and Call of Cthulhu. It, you know, is killer instrumental. But, dude, I'm a Puppets guy, you know, and Damage Incorporated is my favorite Metallica song. So I would side with Master of Puppets. You know, I know that's controversial because, man, you know, like I said, Ride Lightning is a fucking killer ass record, no doubt. But I mean, you know, I guess this question seems arbitrary because they're both fucking legendary, but it's kind of more of like a gut check. Like, if you're about to go to your phone and play one of those Metallica albums, which one? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And for me, it's Puppets. I mean, I love Justice, though, and I've kind of turned a corner where that might be like my album now, because I burned out Puppets for so fucking long, and then like I kind of came around to the production of Justice. But if I have to pick between the two that you chose, I think it's definitely Puppets for me. So that's my vote.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. My friend and I had been debating it, and he falls on Ride the Lightning, where I think Master's kind of the complete package. The production's way better. And
yeah, I mean, I guarantee if you're a thrash metal purist, you can make the argument that the production, the approach, and everything that's happening on Ride the Lightning is the foundation that built, you know, Matt Puppets.
Sure.
And that, like, it, you can hear that it's raw. You can hear that James is younger. He's
sure.
fucking drinking beer right there, and that in those booths, and you know, like, you can hear like Cliff Burton basically like gifting us their version of neoclassical metal with like that intro. But like, I don't know, man. Fuck, have you heard Orion?
That's what I'm saying.
Sick as fuck.
That's what I'm saying.
Disposable Heroes, sick.
That's what I'm saying. That's what
I don't
I'm
even
saying.
Like the thing that should not be, and that's a good song. Honestly, I know motherfuckers are gonna hate because I got dudes in my band that love that song, but I'm more of a Leopard Messiah. Like,
yeah.
I think that's that hidden track. But all the, you know, that album, that's the album, dude.
So pick one song. What's the one song we could play for you on Mandatory Metallica?
Definitely Damage Incorporated, dude.
Love it.
That's my shit. I don't know why that's the last song. Fuck, man, they just had this thing like that. Dire's Eve, that's the last song on the next record. Like, dude, they had this thing where they just kicked you in the ass at the end. You know, I'm more of a, like, here's the grandiose fucking unveiling of the kind of ending guy. But Metallica's more of a, like, oh, you want one more? Fucking here you go. And it's like, I love that approach too.
Punch in the teeth, make you want more, leave you wanting more.
Well, they definitely, they did that up, you know, up until the later albums, that's for sure. Cheers, dude.
Thank you for the great album. See you out there in LA.
On. Yeah, dude, get in there. You'll go, yo, Mike, I'll give you a high five. It'll be sick. Then you'll see some whammy bar shit. I promise.
Can't wait for you to lay
you'll
on that
be
whammy
lots
bar.
Of whammy bar shit.
Beautiful,
all right,
Mike.
Cheers, dude.
Cheers.
Party on.
Bye-bye.
All right, later.
Dude, you absolutely rock. Thank you so much for checking out the entire interview. Now just hit subscribe. Subscribe to the podcast, Radioactive Mike Z. My interviews in their entirety, available on all the major platforms, TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, whatever you're listening to right now, just hit the subscribe button. Make sure to give me a follow on the socials as well. I'll follow you back at MikeZ967. And bro, don't miss the radio show. Now 10 p.m. to midnight on 96.7 KCAL Rocks in the Southern California Inland Empire area, Riverside, San Bernardino County. Always streaming on live at kcalfm.com. You, my friend, absolutely rock. Dude, you absolutely rock. Thank you so much for checking out the entire interview. Now just hit subscribe. Subscribe to the podcast, Radioactive Mike Z. My interviews in their entirety, available on all the major platforms, TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, whatever you're listening to right now, just hit the subscribe button. Make sure to give me a follow on the socials as well. I'll follow you back at MikeZ967. And bro, don't miss the radio show. Now 10 p.m. to midnight on 96.7 KCAL Rocks in the Southern California Inland Empire area, Riverside, San Bernardino County. Always streaming on live at KCALFM.com. You, my friend, absolutely rock.